Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode is sponsored by R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice, a welcome addition to anyone's sleep routine. Pace Case, if you know me, and you do, you know that I'm working all hours of the day, all hours of the night. So the sleep that I do get has to be very good sleep. And I'm always looking for ways to up my sleep routine. Sometimes I'll read a book to go to sleep. Sometimes
I'll... The Bachelor?
That book keeps me very awake. It's very engaging. That never puts me to sleep. I will sometimes just put down my cell phone after a long day of looking at a screen. It's nice to get some time away from the screen. I also will incorporate some R.W. Knudsen Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice. It truly makes you go to sleep a little easier. It's the thing you need to help you drift off into the dreamland.
As more and more people are looking to prioritize sleep, Organic Just Tart Cherry is having a moment thanks to Tart Cherry's potential sleep-related benefits and potential to aid in muscle recovery when you get those gains like clues. We're seeing this in the viral Sleepy Girl Mocktail trend on social media. R.W. Knudsen has a whole lineup of natural juices with zero added sugar, so you can feel good about adding them to your wellness routine. It's all about celebrating those daily wins. Organic Just Tart Cherry Juice is made from tart cherries, which may help you get a better night's sleep because they have natural melatonin.
R.W. Knudsen crushes only 100% real ingredients, so you can crush everything you do. Pick up a bottle at your local grocery store today.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case. It is our finale of Gore Girl Summer. What is going to follow is one of the most extraordinary interviews Bachelor Clues and I have ever done. He is, his voice has not quite recovered fully, but he powered through with this interview that I think everyone in the pit is really going to enjoy. So, let's get into it. This is
Welcome to the Pit.
Today, we are joined by one of the most influential players in the history of the game. He came from humble beginnings in the first weeks of Bachelorette season 14, evolving his status as an under-the-radar floater to finally become a favorite who exited in third place with an incredible heartbreak edit that many thought made him a shoe-in for Bachelor. Although his toes never touched the stinging sands of paradise, this player found his way into Bachelor royalty nonetheless with a post-game strategy second to none that encompassed everything from dating with the player pool to outstanding parasocial work, including what we think is the best free agent podcast in Bachelor Nation. We are humbled and honored to have with us in the pit today none other than the fiancé of one of the only five active 2 Million Club members, author of The Restart Roadmap, Rewire and Reset Your Career, and the host of the Trading Secrets podcast himself, Jason Tardig.
Yes, that intro was awesome. Of course, you guys put your own spin on it. That was maybe my favorite intro of any podcast I've been on.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Oh my God.
I love it.
I can die happy now.
Thank you,
Jason,
for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
I am so honored to be here. Thank you.
We just warned Jason, but Clues is back post getting his tonsils out. He is trying to become a bionic podcaster in time for the Windeckia season. So he's removed his vocal cords and updated them. And he is now Val Kilmer in Top Gun for this interview.
I wish that was
Have
true.
You seen that?
I wish I had AI assistants right now.
Did you schedule the tonsil removal around the season finale of the next show? Or season premiere
yes.
of the next show?
I schedule everything around premieres of Bachelor and Bachelorette.
That's amazing.
Rest assured, including life-changing surgeries.
Unfortunately, that is true.
I just wanted to get it done as soon as possible for a variety of reasons. But Jason, you have 869,000 Instagram followers, which puts you at number 36 on the all-time leaderboard right now.
Wow.
That is immediately
Dang.
In between Kelly Flanagan from Bachelor Season 24 and the incomparable Rachel Lindsay. Impressive company to keep.
Wow. I did not know all that. That's pretty cool. 36, huh? I'll take it. And those are two awesome individuals who kick ass in their life. So cool.
Indeed.
That is true. You're not saying you want to now take them down so that you can be number 35.
No, I don't look at it like that. I'm just like, how can I be the best like of what I'm trying to do, right? So I keep the stuff I do is so different than what Rachel does or what Kelly does. And so I don't look at it like I gotta move up in the Game of Roses rankings. Although that's kind of cool. Maybe one day that's what I should start doing.
That's right. It's like CrossFit, basically. You know who your nearest competitor is, and you have to take them down.
I love it.
Yeah, we'll trade that secret after.
There you go.
we are going to get into your playing days and your post-playing days, but before we dive into the meat of the interview, we would like to set the table with some background.
Yeah.
You know, who was Jason Tardig before he sits before us today?
That's awesome.
Where are you from? You're from Buffalo, is that right?
Yes, we just have we have another guest here. His name is Pino Grigio.
Oh my
and
God.
He just
I can't
entered.
Believe this.
He's at
I
my
can't
he's
Pino.
At my he's just got his the ball in his mouth and he's sitting right up to my right. So he's here keeping me company. But before Pino and before all
we
this craziness,
Pino.
He is the man. I was born in Buffalo, New York, and I was I played soccer in college, played hockey growing up, studied business, went to get my MBA at University of Rochester in accounting and finance, worked 10 years in corporate banking, just kind of relocated all over the place. Like you tell me where to go, I'll be there. And my last stop was in Seattle, Washington. I moved from New York to Seattle. And that was when I took the leave of absence from work and I went on the show. And then I actually came back from the show and went back to work for about a year. And then broke off to do my own thing. So that was a little bit about me, where I'm from, where I've been, and where I am today with Pino at my feet.
Pino is a multiple Creature of the Week winner, by the way, on our podcast.
Yes.
We've given Pino so many awards for his parasocial play, we cannot even count.
Pino,
but
we have theorized whether they are trained golden retrievers.
You got an award, dude. Oh, he loves that. He put his paw up.
What kind of stuff did you watch when you were growing up as a kid?
Big into sports, big into documentaries, big into, are we talking like Power Rangers as a kid? Or are we talking like,
kind of like TV. Did you grow up with reality TV at all? Were you watching any like network sitcoms, any of that kind of stuff?
I wasn't a huge network sitcom guy. I would watch Friends here and there with my mom. Here's what I would do. I spent a lot of time with my dad because I was always playing hockey, always playing soccer. It was always sports related. So the
Same.
Way I would like connect with my mom, and my dad was my coach and always driving me and stuff
Same,
like that,
dude.
Right? So the way I would connect with my mom is I would just watch TV with her. I wasn't really interested in Seinfeld. Maybe I didn't understand the concepts, but I would watch it with her. Friends, I would watch it with her. But I did watch Bachelor. That was her thing. her thing was Bachelor, Bachelorette. Mm. And so as a kid, like high school days, I would sit there on the couch and watch it with my mom.
What was the first season you remember?
So I remember like vividly the Trista and Ryan season. And I remember, I'll never forget when like they showed Ryan and he was like on his bachelor party. I don't know if you guys remember this. They filmed his bachelor party and he like ran back to her because like he missed her on his bachelor party or whatever. And was like, I didn't want to do what they were doing. I just love you so much. I want to marry you. And I was like, wow, that guy is a good dude. So I remember that one. That was pretty vivid.
So when you came into the game, did you have these memories from prior seasons you would watch with your mom? Were there any players who stood out, maybe Ryan Sutter, as being like great players that you wanted to emulate when you came into the game?
I just love the way, like every time you guys say it, it kind of catches me when you call it the game and the players. I'm like, this is amazing. I don't even think about it.
Yeah,
to you guys, it's second nature. To me, it's so foreign, but I love it. And I know that's obviously the premise of the show. But as far as like, as far as like players go, I think it was more, I remember obviously Tristan Ryan. I remember like from the show, Sean Lowe, like was just like really well received and perceived. I remember he was like the guy,
the golden child, we call him.
Yeah, the golden child. And I would ask my mom, like, you know, who are people from the frat? Because I didn't watch it too much later on, so she would like tell me the who's of who's. But okay, here's what's funny. That's very correlated to your show. Is I didn't really study the game at all. But what I did do was, and in the actual memo that I wrote my boss to go on the show, is in my book. And what I did was I looked at the last three seasons of The Bachelorette. I found them on wherever the hell they were. Like I remember having to buy a couple seasons on like Amazon or something. And I would just fast forward to the rose ceremony because I was trying to get an idea of how many people started and how many roses were given out every week so that I could give my boss an indication of the, I'm not kidding you guys, the percentage of likelihood of when I would return. So genius. I would use the producers to find out, hey, like if you make it this far, like how long is that? I have to let my work know. It wasn't a lie. I had to let my work know. I'd watch the show to see how many were given out. And I have the whole percentage. I'm like, there's a 20% chance I'm back within 3 days, a 40% chance I'm back. But there, I think it was like a 92 something percent chance that I'd be back after like a month of filming. And that wasn't the case. I was there for the whole 2.5 months. So
were you figuring that you would do better than the average when you were calculating this?
No.
You're like, yeah, 30% go home night one, but that won't be me.
You have to assume you will be the average.
I was thinking the average, and I protect myself a little bit sometimes, thinking like worst case to not overstate like confidence. So I'll be like, yeah, I'm going home after, you know, 2 weeks. So if I can exceed that, I'm like happy with the expectation. But no, I didn't think I was going to go long.
Did you tell any of the other players about this strategy, about these statistics that you had come up with and told your bosses?
Oh, you're saying while we were filming?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. But the guy who knew everything, I did more listening than talking. When I was in the game, everyone knew everything. And there was, you know, when you put that many, I will say alpha personalities and a lot of egos, more justifiably so. I mean, they're MLB players, NFL players, the creator of Venmo. I mean, the list of people that were on our season, like, yeah, I get it. Harlem Globetrotter. Like, of course there's egos in the room. I found that it behooved me to do less talking and more listening. And I still will give him a little crap today. And we even kind of chirped him a little bit on the show. But Blake Horseman knew everything. I mean, he literally knew. He knew like what week was what week and where we were going and when we should be traveling, how many people should be getting roses. Like he knew the game because he was such a big fan of the show. So I would often ask him, how many do you think is going to go? And then I would like benchmark my little notes in my head and be like, okay, that calculation was on point.
So you had extreme strategy. You and we call him Baylock High, that's his Instagram handle, but Blake Horseman, you guys had extreme strategy while you're in the game. And the reason that I asked if you told anyone about your percentages that you were calculating is because if that were ever to be outed by the producers in an ITM or something to the other players, it's an immediate for the wrong reasons attack. Because if you've thought, at least in a contemporary game, if you've thought about the game at all, your place in it, when you might be kicked off, how long you might go in the season, you can immediately be accused of being for the wrong reasons.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
if
I wasn't
even thought about being Bachelor.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't talking at all openly about this. Now, the one thing is, like, for me, again, it was, I used it as a strategy to get approval to work, to get off of work so that I could still get paid and be approved to use. I had 20, I think it was like 24 PTO days. So if I could effectively get work to approve it with this presentation, then I would technically be being paid full time as a senior vice president, corporate banker while filming the show, which was my ultimate goal.
Professional player.
Unreal.
Through and through. I'm so impressed. Did you take a journal when you were in?
I did. At first, I brought a journal. And at first I was like, I'm just going to bring it because everyone says bring it. But I didn't expect to use it. But I used it way more than I ever anticipated.
Yeah. Can we ever see that journal? The Tardik papers must be released.
I think I might have, because for my book, I had to find all this stuff. I might have it in here.
Oh my God, what an artifact from the game.
Wait, this is hilarious. Yeah, I got like a bag.
This is like George Brett's pine tar bat.
This is hilarious.
Oh, you have it. Look within arm's reach.
Well, this is, for the book, I needed stuff like this. Let's see what's in here. I didn't use a lot of this though. So this is like I'm literally, I feel like I'm breaking open a time capsule.
As do we.
Oh wow.
You don't want to know how much money Chad would pay you for this. He collects artifacts from the game.
Oh wow. Yeah, there is I have no cocktail. No cocktail party, because I wrote notes about like what happened. I wrote
straight
Wayne,
throws.
Fucking Wayne Newton. That was a bad one. I screwed up.
But you got to meet Wayne Newton. We'll get to
oh,
some
look
of the
at
dates.
This. Things I'll never forget. I've never even seen this.
You're like, I've forgotten all of these.
Yeah, this is so funny. Helping Colton with the Tia situation. Oh man, this like games of blackjack, like the guys we would play like blackjack and different games, date stuff. Yeah, there's the different gifts. I talk about gifts Saturday, day three, post hometown.
Is it illegal for you to ever publish that stuff? Or not illegal, but is it against your contract?
I just haven't honestly looked into this. Eddie took Eric top three. This is this is so funny. I don't think I ever shared this. I was sitting in like the hotel after my hometown, and someone recognized me at the pool. And I remember because I think
from the cast list?
From Reality Steve or something. So she was like a big fan, and I was sitting by the pool, and she said something like, are you filming? Like, so like she knew about the like specifics of like where the hometowns were at or something. And she's like, are you filming right now? And I just like stopped. I was like, I can't really have this conversation. So I didn't really partake in it. And I remember her saying, she's like, okay, I respect that, but what'd she say? A live concert, like Blake did or something like that. She's like, I hope you get a live concert.
Oh God.
And I remember like my mom was like, what the hell? I got chicken wings in an ice skating rink. And then I remember at the rose ceremony, I said to Blake, I'm like, you got a live concert, you sicko. You know, he just started laughing. Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. I'll have to go through that journal one day.
I'm telling you, no player has published their journal from the show.
Yeah.
I think the first one that does it, it will be a New York Times bestseller instantaneously. Especially if it's got some dirt in it, obviously.
That's true. That's probably true.
Real quick, you went in. I listened to you on a podcast where you were talking about you were up for a different Bachelor auction, like for charity, and this is how you ended up getting cast.
Yeah, funny story. So there's Gilda's Club, Gilda Radner, famous SNL comedian. She died abruptly of ovarian cancer. So they created this non for profit called Gilda's Club, and it's in communities all over all of the United States, and they raise funds to provide. For families that are undergoing cancer treatment of some form. And so they had this Gilda's Bachelor auction. And so it was all different people from the area. You would have to get a sponsor. So you have to raise money before. And then you would have to try and get friends and family to raise money and support you. And you'd go out and you'd kind of like dance, and people would actually bid on you to go on a date. But with the bid, they got a package of all these goods, and all the bid, the date money went obviously directly to the charity. So that night, like my best buddy Hawk and I did it. And I think he ended up coming in like, I don't know, third or second of raising the most money. And that night I raised the most money. And it was, I'm not kidding, it was like 8 months later. He was like,
did
a
you do
Sunday.
A dance performance?
How oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I came out to roll old time rock and roll. I had like American flag sunglasses on and American flag tie. I took my shirt off. I was like, well, I took my blazer off. I was spinning it. I had a, you know, beach balls. I was going nuts. I was going out.
Magic Mike.
And your best friend's name is Hawk?
Hawk. So
this
Hawk.
Is all very Top Gun to me. Your friend is a call sign. You're doing American flag beach ball performances. Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah, so Hawk calls me. Now, this was in Rochester, New York. I moved from Rochester to Seattle, and I get a call from Hawk, and it was on Sunday. He's like, dude, I got to tell you something. I was like, whoa, I got to tell you something. And I was like, you go first. He's like, The Bachelor called me to be casted for The Bachelorette. And I was like, whoa, I got a phone call, and they left a voicemail to call him back to be cast for that show. You gotta be kidding me. And we're convinced it came from that night where our videos mm-hmm. were submitted, because there's like 2,500 people there. And we both got the call the same day. We both went through the casting process. I ended up getting on the show. He didn't. But ironically enough, there was an episode where they surprised me with three of my best friends, and Hawk was there. So right. He still jokes around. He's like, season 14, episode 6, I got 2 minutes of airtime. I was on the
right. He made it. Or it could have been a scout. Like in any professional sport, they're sending bachelor scouts out to these other events, these kind of little minor league events, like what you're doing to scout for talent.
I think they do that in LA. I'm not sure they're going all the way to Rochester, New York to do that.
No, I don't think so either. I'm sure it was a video. But did you have any idea when you went into the show that you might be able to come out of this with a social media platform big enough to make a viable career, to be able to transition completely into that?
No. So answer is definitely not. I didn't know enough about social media. I knew that obviously other players, as you guys would say, had created these like wild followings, but I never thought, similar to me not thinking I wouldn't like go long. I was just like, if that type of thing happens, like, cool. But I had no expectation of it. And I think the people that have I think the people that have an expectation of it typically are the people that are let down.
Interesting. Well, I'll just say this. I've started coaching players with everyone has a different goal. I'll say that much. But some of their goals are specifically and only to go into the show, to get a massive social media following. And I will just say, I don't think that's a bad thing, and it can be very successful.
Yeah. Especially now. I mean, this is 2018. The game was different. Now there's so much transparency around the fact, you know, in influencing, you can make some damn good money. Before then, people laughed at influencers. Like, look at these idiots. They didn't realize how much they were raking in. I think that anyone that, I'll say this statement and I'll live by this, and I would challenge anyone that says anything otherwise, any individual that goes on national network reality television, there is a small portion, maybe it's only a percent, maybe it's 90%. I think it varies, but there is a portion you are going on for potential opportunity. There's not mm-hmm. one person that's entering that scenario without at least a percentage of thought that there could be opportunity, and that could be a driver as to why you're doing it.
Of course, just because like you're saying, you're laying out the stats of, well, it's this likely I'm going to get sent home in 2 weeks, so I'll be back at my job or whatever. I think everybody goes in, at least with a rudimentary understanding of the raw statistics, that you're going up against 30 other people, roughly.
Right.
So your odds are about 2.5 to 3% that you could make it to the, you know, final spot, or even the last two spots. It's roughly the same of maybe becoming the next lead. Those odds are not good.
Right.
But you have to be aware of it. You have to be calculating it. I don't know if you know the answer to this, but even if you can speculate, I think it would be fascinating. Of all the players who have come through the game, who do you think has been able to parlay their post-game career into the most money? Who do you think has made the most off of their social media, subsequent appearances, podcasts, whatever? And what do you think that number is, by the way?
Who do I think has made the most money? I mean, it's got to be close. I mean, Jesse has got to be up there.
Palmer, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think Jesse Palmer, he's gotten some big deals. He's in the ABC group. He's now hosting. I bet you.
His social media is low, though. He's not making like.
Oh, you're saying just on social media?
I'm saying everything included, because there are people like Vial, for example,
yeah,
who has a huge social media following. So he's doing SpawnCon. His podcast is gigantic. He's dabbled in some kind of like acting and things like that. He's not making much money off that, obviously. Even Caitlin. I mean, she's got to be doing very well with everything she's doing still in the ABC family. She hosted two seasons of the show. Mm-hmm. One, Dancing with the Stars, has a successful
wine, scrunchy podcast. I think she's the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, she's definitely up there. I would say she's up there for that. I would say the answer, if you're saying who is monetized the most from being on the show, as it relates to utilizing their platform to create monetization and only monetization. I'm not saying like, you know, like maybe Jesse Palmer went into like just TV, like just that. I think it's going to be a female and it's going to be a former lead. And I think, you know, when you look at the followings of the leads who have absolutely crushed it, you have the assumptions, and those are definitely accurate. When you look at like a Caitlin or a JoJo or
Hannah Brown,
Jillian Harris has built an empire.
I know, north of the border.
You know, but there's so many people who have done a really good job, just like not in the world of The Bachelor, but they haven't used the leverage, the platform as much, but they have like totally, like Travis Stork absolutely crushes it in the health field. And he was on the doctor's TV for like 10 years and he was doing a lot of TV work. So there's no Bachelor function there, but you know, and obviously Nick does very well with his stuff. So there's definitely a ton of monetization there as well. But the females will always do better for the most part.
Yeah, that is my question though. Why do you think that they're just better at being influencers? There's more of a market for it. Why do you think that
it's just that it's that the audience, like if you look at any of our social medias, any one of us that's been on the show, our audience is going to be at the lowest end, at the absolute lowest end, it's going to be 85%. Females, and the age demographic is for the large majority of it's like 18 to 44. So when you have that category, your ability to relate, your ability to put content that is useful, your ability to sell is going to be significantly higher when it is a female selling to a female as opposed to a male selling to a female, especially when you look at the categories within social media influencing where there's big dollars, right? So, you know, the beauty space and the lifestyle space and the attire space, it's going to be an easier just natural connection. We talk about all things, right? Like, just think about like building the connection over like, you know, dealing with like, you know, menstrual cycles and the impact of it and the emotions of it and actually having like a baby and like that, you know, you think about the different cycles of life, like naturally they'll always connect more with their audience.
And so as we're talking about who these players are, who are at the top of this mountain, what is that mountain? How many dollars comprise that mountain? What is like a Hannah Brown making per year? An estimation. I assume you don't know specifically,
I don't have a clue.
He's
but
like, I do her finances.
Yeah. That would be great. I would say anyone in that realm is if managed properly and they're doing it right, should absolutely, if you play like the over-under game, absolutely over the 6-figure mark and certainly in the 7-figure mark.
You think just from social media programming alone? Because Hannah Brown also had a book come out that did very well.
Yeah, I mean, but the basis of the sales from I had a book that, you know, we've done about 25,000 copies or so. But
that's great.
But the basis of that is coming through your social media, right? So they're not, it's in Barnes & Noble and it's here, but that's not, those eyeballs aren't selling. It's you selling it. So you, like her unbelievable book success, which she has crushed it with her book, that is coming from her social platform.
Yeah. We had a book come out this year as well. And we, we know all too well.
It's a lot
to us and only us to sell that book.
A lot.
I know, but we're already doing worse than Jason. Jason has his book right behind him in his Zoom.
Yeah,
gotta promote that thing.
Absolutely.
And you're matching it with your outfit and mug.
That was unintentional, but I'll take
professional. So let's get into your season. Bachelorette season 14. It's one of the most stacked player rosters of all time. You have Grocery Store Joe, who we didn't know back then, but he eventually reaches the heights of the Million Instagram Club, became an official Bachelor Nation podcast host. We have Blake Horseman, a.k.a. Baylock Guy, who'd go on to become the most outspoken player in players' rights advocacy in the nation. We have Colton Underwood, who would become a Bachelor, crack into the 2 million club, and obviously become one of the most controversial figures in the history of the game. And Kufrin herself, who would go on to host Bachelor Nation podcasts, become the face of the game in the podcast world, and host Bachelor Live on stage. So a stacked, stacked season.
Do you have any idea when you're going into the game that, that these kinds of things are possible? Or let me ask, I guess it's easier to ask this. Were you aware that the fan base of this show was so fervent that, no. that you were entering really a world unto itself, almost like the Star Wars universe or the Marvel universe when you became a player in this game?
No, I didn't have a damn clue how this audience is a very, very engaged audience. Very, very, very engaged audience. So I
hear some suffering in that.
I just had no idea. What is going on here? How is this all working? So I had no idea about that. And all those, you know, I think you talk about a lot of those opportunities. Even like you look at like the Bachelor podcast and live on stage, like none of that was there when I was there. And a lot of them came to fruition after. But I do remember when opportunities started coming in, even after the show, I didn't know. Once we finish filming, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, you have no idea what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden it hits you like, out of nowhere. It's like an uppercut that like knocks you out. You're like, what just happened? Like, what's going on? You know? And for the good and bad, like you're getting people dissecting into like all your different lives, and you're hearing about, you know, your ex-girlfriends are getting called from different people wanting to know things.
Oh my God.
And, you know, you're all this like crazy shit's going on. But then all of a sudden someone's like, Jason, so we want you to go to this club, like bring your friends, we're gonna pay for everything, and then we'll give you like, you know, it's $8,000 work. And you're like, excuse me, like, what'd you say? Like, yeah, so does that work for you? I'm like, to go to a bar? And they're like, yeah, we'll get your flights and hotel too, we'll get your meals. And you're just like, what is going on? You're kind of looking like, what's happened? And that hits you quick. And there's a learning curve that just gets really intense, and you either figure it out quickly, you get burned a bunch of times, or you just step away.
Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin. If you have sensitive skin, you're going to want to hear about OneSkin's scientifically proven topical supplements. This is face, eye, body, shield, and it can all be used with any of their other products, which are free from over 1,500 chemicals and preservatives that can make skin red, irritated, or itchy. Their products are safe for sensitive skin. It's just one of the reasons they've earned the Skin Safe seal of approval.
You got to keep that skin glowing if you want to be keeping up the level of face play that I've got going on. And OneSkin was founded by an all-woman team of scientists. Their products are backed by extensive lab and clinical data to validate their efficacy and safety on all skin types. Their topical supplements are the easiest way to keep your skin healthy and hydrated without the harsh ingredients or irritation found in other skincare products often. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code ROSES at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code ROSES. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support Gore and tell them that we sent you.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered shower head comes in.
Known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, Canopy is dermatologist recommended.
This unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free, installation's a breeze, and its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement. Go to canopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, Gore listeners can use our code ROSES at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you. Clues. Underwear drawers, they're not organized. They're like the Wild West, the final frontier of wardrobes. Mm. And there's no rhyme or reason to them. You got ones that are super old, different brands, etc. You don't know what to expect. But now I have felt the buttery soft comfort of Me Undies. And now I want to replace the whole drawer with Me Undies because those are my now go-to. I'm currently wearing their long sleeve shirt and my, which is not what this ad is about, but I am also wearing the super soft, sustainable modal fabric thong with no roll back waistband. You want that. You don't want it to be rolling. You don't want it to be showing. And I'm hooked. I don't want to wear anything else. It's all got to go now.
Well, this ad actually is kind of about that, Pace Case. Everybody knows MeUndies makes great underwear. It's in the name, MeUndies. But it's not just about underwear. You can explore the lounge collection featuring comfy joggers, hoodies, onesies, and a whole bunch more. And their Move Me activewear collection is the softest activewear on the market. There's no doubt about it. Right now, you can get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/roses. That's MeUndies.com/roses for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies. Comfort from the outside in.
From it.
And the show has no system in place to kind of get you ready for this like other professional sports do.
Yeah, I can't speak for what the show does now. You know, they give guidance and stuff like that. They're very, you know, they try and be very supportive. But as far as the business aspect of what you're going to do with what you have been given, given the fact you're on a television show for however long you may be on, is all up to you.
God damn. And so when you come off the show, you came off in third place, obviously. Got a huge heartbreak at it. People thought you were going to be the next Bachelor. You mentioned people are like calling your ex-girlfriends and stuff. Is that the producers calling them or is that just other people calling them?
No, that was just like other people like digging stuff up and like mm-hmm. wanting dirt and like just trying to like get information to just like put out there and, you know, stuff like that. And
Did you prep your family and exes and stuff?
I did. I called everyone. Yeah. And I just told them, hey, this is what's going on. And my family was not thrilled, but my boss wasn't thrilled.
Even your mom?
Oh no. She was like, you're not going on that show. I was like, no, I think I'm what? Going. I was like, I think I'm going to. She's like, no, you're not. And I was like,
holy shit.
I was like, mom, I think I'm going to. And she's like, this is my, like you, there's three boys in this family. I'm on an island by myself. My little world is The Bachelor. My friends and I gossip about it. Like, that's our world. You just stay out of there. And I was like, mom, I'm going. And then she was like freaking out about it. And I was like, don't worry. You won't be involved. I'll be kicked off before you're involved. And then of course.
Yeah, there's an X percent chance that I'm making.
And of course she got the call for hometowns. And yeah. Probably,
but she was great. Yeah. Your whole hometown. Let's just get right to it. This is the first round of playoffs. You go to your hometown, your whole family's there, and they turn out, I think, one of the best familial performances of all time, including your brother and his husband, which, to our knowledge, is the first representation of a gay couple that has ever been on The Bachelor.
I think it was. I mean, I don't know the history that well, but I think it was, and not only was it that reputation, but it was beautifully done by everyone involved, right? It wasn't a thing. It wasn't, let's make exactly. this a scene or a one-on-one, like, deep talk. It was just, this is my brother, and this is his husband. This is my mom, and this is my dad. Nice to meet everyone. And it was great.
Yeah, I totally agree. Did you know in that moment that you were in some way helping to push the culture of the game forward in a more progressive angle?
No, I had no idea. I had no idea. But I will say that after watching it back and seeing the reaction, I was like, wow, that's amazing. Maybe some of the reason I had no idea is because I would never, like, I don't know, maybe oblivious to it. It was just like growing up in a family the way I grew up in, I just always like it was second nature. It wasn't
totally
made to be a big deal. It wasn't made to be a big discussion point.
But I think it might also be because, you know, we see this as a professional sport. Some people do, some people don't, some people agree with us, some people don't. But in the end, like, I'm a big sports fan as well, like you. My dad was my coach for everything. I played all the fucking sports growing up, blah, blah, blah. And I really liken the progression of The Bachelor, specifically in terms of its, like, social progress, to other professional sports, where you still don't have, like, an out gay Major League Baseball player. You know, those things happen so slowly in these sports.
Sure.
And so with something like The Bachelor, to even see the representation of it in a way that is normal and that they're not calling attention, I just thought it was, like, it was a very big moment in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you're saying, you're not aware of it because maybe you don't see it like that, but the body of media that exists from the show over the past 20 whatever years, you just get these little smatterings of things like that, of any kind of progressive leaning. Those are always super, super important.
Yeah.
Because you see the same type of hometown date happen again and again. And
so
it is a slow moving train with, you know, certain progressive aspects of it.
100%. So that's actually so, so well said. And yeah, I think the way it was done and the way it all came out was just beautiful. It was great.
You just real quickly, your first night, you have a pretty subdued night one. You do what we call an It Takes Two limo exit, where you interact with the Bachelorette and you do a secret handshake from back home. Did you plan that out? Was there any thought of recreating your Top Gun striptease instead?
I guess I'm, like, not the most creative, but I talk about it in the book. I came up with the whole idea. I mean, one thing I said was, I don't know if it made it or not. I don't think it did. My parents have been married for over 35 years. The basis of their relationship, and, like, I've just seen their love grow every day. The basis of their relationship is their best friends. That's what I want with my partner. And the only place I could think to start is my best friends and I back home all have our own handshakes. So let's start somewhere. Made a handshake and that was it. So that was my little creative brain and what I came up with. And nothing, you know, very boring and vanilla, but got the go and went for it.
I like it. I think a secret handshake is actually, like, subtly a really good play, because then you have this thing that you're known for. Even if they maybe forget your name, they still can associate you with that.
Exactly. Like, when you start the next conversation, you have, like, a common ground to start it with.
Yeah.
Even if they forget,
break the touch barrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's
at a certain point you wind up in Vegas and you're not on this date. This is a one-on-one date with Colton. But you get ushered into what we call a peeping Tom, which is where the producers force you to look out a window at the one-on-one date as it's occurring. And you guys are all pressed up against this window in your suite. I think you're at the Aria and a car is coming down the road and there's a big billboard, a LED sign that says kiss her. And you guys all put together, this is for Colton and Becca Kufrin. How does being kind of the victim of a peeping Tom actually work? Do the producers get you? Are they, like, pushing you toward the window, or they just tell you, like, hey, go look at that window?
Well, there's only so much to do. You're sitting in a suite for hours and hours, and then there's, like, this, the windows are huge and you see it all, and one person sees it and you all run over there. I mean, that's what happened at the Aria. Like, we all saw, like, I mean, the Aria sign was in our face. I mean, it was like, it was in our face the way we're talking to each other. And there wasn't much going on. We're all seeing the fan room and someone saw it. And of course the reaction went from there. And yeah, I do actually remember that. And everyone was just, like, all bummed out, especially like the people that, like, were the front runners, that you could see, like, their emotions were impacted much more severely than I think everyone else's.
Does anybody in those moments where somebody's getting super pissed, like, oh, I can't believe this, is anybody like, chill, dude, the producers are trying to get us mad? Is anybody aware of what is actually happening in these situations?
I mean, I think so, but no one really, it just isn't, it wasn't really talked about, you know? And I think you're also, you're just in a bubble where you're not, everyone, I think it's always like, it's easy to be, you know, it's easy to be the quarterback on Monday. Like, it's easy to like look back on it or from the outside and be like, well, duh. But when you're in it, it's not like that in the way that you would assume. Yeah. Like you're very focused on what's right in front of your face. Probably because there's nothing else, right? There's like, you guys know, I'm sure you've heard it a million times. There's no phone, no TV, no internet, no, you know, anything like that. So you're just very, what's in your front is, what's right here is magnified to a level that's much different than your just everyday life, checking the boxes, going meeting to meeting, getting your stuff done, having conversations.
Oh, I love to Monday quarterback. I'm like, if I went in this game, I would just be crying the whole time. I couldn't do any of this. But, you know, I like to respect the good plays.
It's intense. Like, I remember, I mean, I like the way you guys talk about a game. Like, it's just intense. Like, the, you know, just the traveling and the mental aspect of it. And then as your feelings grow, like, you know, all this stuff and the curiosities of where you stand. I mean, it's intense. It's crazy.
As I said, I've been a sports fan my entire life. I don't watch any other sports now because this one to me is, it's so fucking difficult. You have to be, I mean, we've broken it down that basically you're playing to four audiences at any given time. The audience one is the lead, whoever the bachelor, bachelorette is. Audience two is the other players that you're in there with. Yep. Audience three is the producers, and audience four is us at home watching all of this. We are ultimately the people who determine how much money you make by putting a number next to your head, which is not true of any other sport. That also makes this interesting to me. But I can't imagine, you know, how difficult playing that game must be at a high level. And opposite to Pace case, if I came into the game, I'd be there with all my fucking charts. I'd be like, we have an 87% statistical likelihood that the next group date is going to be a fucking artistic endeavor. And if it is, this is what I need to do to secure group residence. You know, I'd have it like robotically planned out.
That's amazing. I'd probably fail. I love it.
That week in Vegas, you get one of the greatest group dates in history. You get to meet Wayne Newton at his home in Vegas and write songs about Kufrin to the tune of his classic hit, Donkashane. What was it like getting to meet one of the biggest celebrity guests in the history of the show?
It was so badass. I remember like getting to meet him. We got to do a tour of his house too. And so like his house is pretty much like a museum. Like he has like all these cars that were either gifted to him or have some type of meaning with like, you know, like a Liberace or Frank Sinatra or something, like some big name. And he, like, I remember seeing the one, I think it was a note that Frank had written. It was a note that Frank had written Wayne, and it was like very soon before he passed away. And it was like all framed, and like Wayne would be showing us. And I remember I was like up front asking him all these questions about things. I'm like, what about this? And what about this? And where'd you get this? And he was like, just wanted to showcase it all, which was so cool. So that was really fun. I really loved that episode. His wife was awesome. And one thing that was funny is I sang Aladdin as loud as I could in front of everyone in the middle of Wayne Newton's family room, which was so much fun. That's a story I won't forget. He liked
it. Oh my God.
He gave me the thumbs up. Oh yeah, I did the whole thing like, bum, bum, gotta keep one jump. And, I mean, I went in and he was laughing so hard. That was fun. Donkashane, I didn't know the words, nor did I know the beat of it. So like doing that whole date was really, really challenging. And then the other thing that made it really challenging is the speed in which the band was playing. Donkashane, they went like really fast. And so I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing. It was a mess. So it was fun though. Like, it was really cool.
I can only do Aladdin.
Yeah, I was like, can I just like, yeah, remix into something else here?
Were there any players who didn't know who he was?
No. Everyone knew who he was.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they'll throw a celebrity guest in there that like nobody knows who the fuck they are, including the at-home watching audience. But Wayne Newton was like, in my mind, he was probably the most famous one of the most famous for sure of any celebrity guest they've had.
Maybe like one of the most legendary. Yeah, Ashton's up there.
Kutcher, Mila Kunis.
Yeah.
Seal is my all-time personal favorite singer.
That's so funny. What a beauty.
Blast from the past.
Yeah, he played at one of the weddings, right? Because I remember Caitlin saying.
Did he?
Yeah, I think it was Jaden Tanner's wedding.
Possibly. He was on it before, too. He was in a Brad Womack season. I forget which one.
Okay, gotcha.
He played it. Didn't he play at the Final Rose Ceremony season 7? Was that him?
No. I forget who that was, but I know what you're talking about. It's not Seal. Anyway. So then we get to the next week. You have your first one-on-one in Richmond, Virginia, and it's what we call a win in Rome. You do a full walking tour of Richmond landmarks. You attend this weird unhappy hour, which is a bunch of goth people having drinks and doing splits and stuff. It seems like something the producers have manufactured. And this is where your friends come in, Hawk. And you, at the end of this, you go to a bar. They're all there, and they kind of give you a glow. They give you the approval to Kufrin. He's a great guy. You're going to love him, all that. You say in an ITM that it was really sweet of her, and you thank her basically for setting this up. Were you aware at the time that she had nothing to do with this, that the producers had done all this? I was curious.
Was I aware at the time? Maybe. I think I wasn't. No, I like thought in my head, like, she probably said this is what she wanted to do and they'll like make it happen. Like I didn't know what I, you know, the old adage, like, if I knew then what I know now. No, I don't think I did.
Wow.
You're like, all I knew was Hawk had bribed the producers to still get on the season.
Yeah. I think in these scenarios too, like in all these scenarios, like, ignorance is bliss. Like, you don't want to be the person that knows all this, because it's gonna catch up to you, or you're gonna try and game something, or you're gonna be something you're not. Like, the way to go in is just like you're riding a roller coaster, and when you're riding a roller coaster, especially if you're not in the front seat, you can't see what's next. You just have to go with it, and that is what ends up being the best result of everything. And I think you've seen it. You guys know better than me, but like the guys and gals that study this stuff and like try and angle or like try and start dating before Paradise, it's like, it never works out. And that's one of the things I actually really...
Or it works out so well that you don't even know.
I mean, I would ask you to have a conversation with a player called Madison Pruitt or Hannah Sluss. I mean, they're...
Tell
in
me
our
more.
Opinion,
let me hear it.
In our opinion, they're the first two professional players that we've ever seen. I don't know if they're overtly aware of the fact that they went in with plans, but I think they've been watching the show since birth, essentially.
Okay.
And by osmosis, if nothing else, they understand the components of the game at a level so high that no one can come close to it. And they obviously crushed season 24. And in Madison Pruitt, you have something actually very special, which is not only someone who's watched every season of the show and understands implicitly the rules and structure of it, she has a father who's ultra competitive. He's a college basketball coach. Part of her introduction package was her wearing like 10 fucking high school championship rings or whatever. She's bred to be a competitor, and she got plopped in this situation that she absolutely dominated. And now watching her post-game career, she's dating a kid who's the son of a billionaire, and she's on the verge of opening her own like televangelical preacher, whatever, you know, like she's going to open some kind of online church very soon. And I think,
and the rest of our questions are about Madison.
Sorry. Far away.
It's just my game analysis. But I think, you know, for the most part, I think you're right. An adaptive strategy is probably best, because all you really have at the end of the day is these percentages, what is most likely to happen. But what happens when that doesn't happen? What happens when the thing that is statistically least likely to happen happens? You have to be able to pivot and switch and kind of like bob and weave. And certainly I think in prior eras, that was, you know, basically the only way you could come in. But now I think you have to have a good game sense or you're completely fucked. Because if you come in just saying, I'll see what happens, I think most likely is you'll be in what we call a mid-season floater. You won't get a lot of screen time and you'll wash out somewhere in the regular season toward playoffs, but you won't make it to playoffs. And then as a result, what we're seeing now with Instagram followings, you won't get the numbers that people used to get by being able to do that.
Sure. That's interesting. I think yes and no. I mean, you know, you could run into a lead, like you could be someone that goes on a season who was on a previous season and would have won the season. And then you're on this season and the lead just has no interest in you. Like if there's no interest in you, unless it's like you're not.
No, that's only one audience. If the lead has no interest to you, you pivot immediately to a third audience, a second audience game, where you're trying to befriend the other players and also tell the producers, I'll do whatever the fuck you want. I'm going to give you good TV.
Yeah, but so many, the amount of people that are capable of that are like one or two. Like Demi is witty, hilarious, funny, intuitive, quick, fast. Most can't pivot like that.
I agree. And that's what I'm talking about. Like I said, I'm trying to coach players
Clues
now.
That's why Clues is still looking for his Tom Brady.
I'm looking for my Tom Brady. I've coached some very capable players.
They won't allow a Tom Brady.
They have no idea Tom Brady is coming. They can't stop Tom Brady. Basically what I have learned
in
coaching the last two seasons-ish, and certainly moving into 27, I think, is probably where I'll do some of my finest work. I've learned a lot just about how the system works from having players come out of it and tell me, like, this is what you're going to see on screen, but here's what actually happened, or, you know, whatever. I can now start to manipulate edits a little bit, which is a second tier of coaching. But ultimately, it's like the game is crystal clear. And the book that we wrote about, like, breaking it down is accurate. These strategies work for sure. Huh. And I think it now is in an era where you have to be able to play to all four audiences, especially if you can't play to the first, because the lead does have the power to kick you off at any time. Like, that is pat, you know, you can't get around that, but you kind of can if you get in with the producers and the lead is like, I'm not interested in this person. The producers are gonna be like, great. You just have to keep them around for 2 more weeks and then you can kick them off. Oh, we need her for 1 more week. Keep her around for 1 more week. Then you can kick her off. You know, there are ways to stay in the show that have nothing to do with the lead.
So do you have people like coming to you that are going to go on the show and ask you for your strategy?
I've placed players in the show.
At this point.
Yeah.
Define placed players in the show. What does that mean?
Taking them from a DM saying, I want to go on this show, to constructing their persona, writing their application, editing their application video, walking them through scenarios, giving them statistical likelihoods, saying this is what your early game strategy is, deep game, long game. If this happens, this is what you should do, blah, 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 blah.
Would you ever expose those people?
No, it will only ever be up to them. If they ever want to discuss it, talk about it publicly, I'm happy to support that conversation, but I will never reveal who any of them are.
Wow. Interesting.
Well, Jason, you can play good strategy whether you're trying to or not. And we saw a lot of that as you headed into playoffs. After your one-on-one, you talked about your grandmother and Alzheimer's, and you bond with Kufrin over this, get that one-on-one date. And then in the Bahamas, you end up on this 3-on-1 with Wills and Leo, and Kufrin is a little worried that you're a little too reserved. Maybe you haven't upped your love levels as fast as the other one, but you do secure the rose anyway and seem unstoppable at this point. At any point in this, are you like, I think my odds have changed at all? Or you're like, I didn't calculate this correctly?
I mean, I think when you're going on a 3-on-1 and you've only got one 1-on-1 and the other 1-on-1s are all guys who have had like one or two or maybe even 3 1-on-1s at this point, you know that, like, you're thinking it's still
you're
not great, right? Like, I'm still like not in a great position here for what I want. But once, you know, you become the one person that comes out of the 3-on-1, like I did, your confidence starts peaking pretty quickly. Like, it escalates pretty fast, I would say. So the confidence gets there, but there's, or for at least for me, like, my confidence after that day was pretty high, but still certainly had some doubts.
Yeah, I mean, your whole season was interesting because you did keep your love level very low until we talked about you had this amazing hometown. Everything seemed to go good. And I think you probably felt some pressure at that point to raise it because you went from what was a love level 1 early in the season to a love level 4 in the auto zone when you and Kufrin are standing outside by the car. You're so insanely in love with you. Bold play. We don't really see a skipping of love level 2 and 3 like that. Sometimes people skip 2, but not usually 3. And you wind up moving on to the round 2 of playoffs Fantasy Suites, which takes place in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And you get the second Fantasy Suite, and everything seems to be going well, except not for Becca Kufrin, we see. She is starting to feel that something is off, and that night, instead of presenting you with a Fantasy Suite card, she says, you know, this just isn't working for me. I got to send you home. I don't want to put you through this kind of a thing. And that's it. You get summarily dismissed, and it seems like you're set up to be the next Bachelor here. Going out in third place is statistically very good to get the next lead. And even at your hot seat in the Mentel All, you get a very good heartbreak edit. And it seems like you're on track to be the next Bachelor. We know that you were contacted to be the next Bachelor from various podcasts and conversations. What is it like to get that call and then to go through that whole process to ultimately not have it happen?
I went through this whole thing, like from start to finish, when they asked me to go on to when that phone call came in, with just keeping my expectations super low. And I don't know that that was the right thing or the wrong thing, but even when that happened, I'm like, they're not going to make me that. Like, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to be the best. Like, there's just no way. There's no way. And even with people being like, it's 100%. Like, when I say like people, like the public or friends, Hawk, it's going to be you. It's going to be you, Hawk. I still was like, Hawk. I just never thought that was actually going to be the situation. I thought for sure it was going to be Blake. I was like, it's definitely going to be Blake. Like, he had his heart literally shattered to pieces. Like, his exit was, I was crying for the guy watching his exit.
Yeah,
and,
like, that was brutal.
I was on the show. He had, you know, we always talked about, like, he had, like, a ton of one-on-ones. He had a ton of group date roses. He had the best dates. Like, I joked around about the concert. Like, he had the live concert, not once, I think, but twice. Like, he had everything that would be, like, perfect scenario for him to be, you know, the guy. So I thought for sure it was going to be him. And at no point was I ever looking in the mirror saying, I will be the Bachelor. Like, never.
Well, it ended up being a good thing because you ended up getting engaged to the person who I believe is the greatest player of all time, Caitlin Bristow. How does it feel to be engaged to the GOAT?
It's so funny. It's what an honor it is to be engaged to the GOAT. I don't really think about it in those terms. But yeah, she is, you know, we've been together now 3.5 years. She's an incredible person, is an inspiration, is a hard worker. The learning curves that she's had to learn from a business perspective, like, she's learned quickly, and she's just very driven. Like, she's very driven. She knows herself better than anyone. And she's built an incredible community, an incredible business. And, you know, this is wildly, wildly, wildly life-changing for her, right? I mean, for all of us, by the way, every single person is life-changing. But for her, like, when her story of just kind of being lost, living on her parents' couch, not knowing what's next, but knowing that there was something bigger than what she was doing and always believing in that, and then getting this opportunity. And you talk about, like, having that it factor. I mean, she's hilarious. Yeah. She's funny. She's relatable. She doesn't give a shit. She stays in her lane no matter what lane someone tries to veer her into. She is relentlessly herself. And yeah, it's pretty exciting, inspiring, and fun to be her partner.
I loved all of the, like, parasocial content that you made during her Dancing with the Stars run, like these TikTok videos with your voiceover. Those brought me to tears. Were you making all of that content by yourself? Do you editing team?
I was sitting in a 1,200 foot square apartment for 3 months, like, losing my shit. It was awful. Dancing with the Stars was awful. And it was so bad because I couldn't do anything. If I ever walked outside, I had this deep concern that I'm going to bring COVID in the house. She got tested every day. So if she got tested positive, then it would be my fault. And these poor dogs were sitting in this 1,200 square foot apartment. So every time they had to go to the bathroom, I had to walk them down. But we're in the middle of Hollywood, so there aren't really any, like, bits of grass to bring them to. So that, you talk about, like, content, I had nothing else to do but work. I just worked every day. I couldn't work out. The gym was closed because of COVID. So I literally just, like, would run around the blocks and then take the dogs for walks every 2 hours and make content.
Well, we're glad you made it through all of that, and we're so glad that you had some time to sit down and talk with us today. Thank you. This has just been absolutely eye-opening, incredible. We truly think that your podcast, Trading Secrets, is the best free agent podcast from Bachelor Nation, bar none. I listen to it constantly and thank you enough for just putting it together, because there's so much valuable stuff in it, talking about the business of social media influence and the business of being in The Bachelor. So please, everybody, check out Trading Secrets if you haven't already, and check out the Restart Roadmap, Rewire and Reset Your Career, Jason Tardik's book. And again, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you guys so much for having me. This was fun. I love the new jargon and concepts, and I think I might even watch the show with a different angle now, knowing what I know from you guys.
We recommend that. It elevates the experience of watching it, for
this
sure.
This was a true treat for us, and we have thousands of questions if you ever want to come back.
All right. I appreciate it. Well, thank you guys so much for having me, and I look forward to tuning in for the next recaps.
All right. Fantastic, man.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Jason.
Yep. Take care.
Bye.
What a phenomenal interview with Jason Tardik. The guy is a legend, and we were so happy that we were able to have him as our Gore Girl summer finale. I think it was a fitting end to a beautiful season, and we will be back on Friday with This Week in Bachelor Nation. You can follow Jason Tardik and everything that he is doing at Jason_Tardik on Instagram, and he has a website, jasontardik.com. And as always, Pace Case, what is that dwab at? It has been 7,386 days without an Asian bachelor. Praise be, Dark Lord Palmer.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.